Yeah, I'm not Tim Johnson. I'm sorry, you won't get four great speakers. You might get three. I'm pitch hitting for Tim. He's in New Orleans at the Hard to Reach conference today. So my apologies for any false advertising here. Nothing up my sleeve, no relationships to disclose. This looks like a pharmaceutical study with this many co-authors. My apologies. The work that I am presenting is principally that of Tim Johnson at the University of Illinois Chicago, his colleague Young Ik Cho at University of Wisconsin Milwaukee, and Gordon Willis at the National Cancer Institute. The big picture here, the kind of context for this is there's a group that long list of folks have been working on developing a short, reliable measure for racial and ethnic discrimination to be used in telephone and other mode health surveys, and trying to develop something that would work across diverse populations. And so this is kind of our big development figure here, starting kind of from literature review development all the way to the end to the assessment of what we're doing. And for what I'm going to be talking about today, we're just looking at two parts. It's the field test that we conducted in multiple languages in 2009, and then the use of behavior coding to try and assess the performance of some of the survey items that we were developing. So this concept of behavior coding is not something new. It's work that Charlie Connell at the University of Michigan developed back in the 70s. And it's used to detect, quote, problems in the interaction between the interviewer and the respondent. And so we're having specially trained coders listen to interviews and code them. And it's really listening for the noise in the interview process. So if we ask a question like, in general, would you say your health is very excellent, very good, good, fair, poor, and the respondent says very good, there's no noise. The question was read properly. The respondent heard the question, and they provided an answer that we expected. Okay, that doesn't always happen. The survey, the sausage factory of the survey world, Charlie Connell really picked up on that noise factor and what we could learn about measurement and potential problems with survey questions by listening to that noise. And so the top here, the behavior coding, is kind of the old part of the presentation. What's new is some of the work that Tim Johnson has been doing in taking that data and using some different kind of techniques to analyze that data. And Tim has been using multi-level modeling to look at the performance of questions at the respondent level as well as characteristics of the questions themselves. The questions that we're evaluating and that we behavior coded are from this discrimination module. It asks about four domains of unfair treatment: recent and everyday discrimination, and then lifetime discrimination. If someone reports that they've been treated unfairly, we ask them about how stressful that experience has been and their responses to unfair treatment. The data that we're looking at today comes from the California Health Interview Survey. That's a project that I direct out of the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research. We did this in 2007 when the module was first pilot tested, and that was done in English only. We went back, cleaned up the English, refined our questions a little bit, and then in 2009 administered it to a subsample of CHIS. So CHIS had about 50,000 households. We selected about 4,700 of those for the discrimination module, and we targeted across language and ethnicity. So we did these interviews in English, Spanish, Cantonese, Mandarin, Korean, and Vietnamese, and we were targeting Latinos, Chinese, Korean, and Vietnamese respondents. That was a subset of CHIS, and then if a subset of the discrimination module was selected for behavior coding, we selected 550 interviews. And we had these behavior coders listening again for that noise and systematically coding that data. And they used four basic codes. One is when the interviewer reads the question incorrectly. Another one for when the respondent interrupts the interviewer. And about 4.7 of the respondents interrupted an interviewer during the DM administration. We had a code for respondent request clarification. We had about 4%. And then this last category, respondent has a problem answering. A full third of the interviews exhibited that problem. So everything else I'm going to talk about is focuses just on that last group. We kind of, because of the size of that, 10% is like the kind of the threshold problem, not a problem. This was a really big problem. So we wanted to really try to better understand this. And again, going back to that old stuff, the traditional use of behavior coding is to listen to that, to the noise, say, okay, this item had the biggest number of problems. We want to fix this question. We're going to flip that around a little bit and use it more as an explanatory tool to try to better understand what the problem is, and are there characteristics either at the respondent level, like classes of respondents by education or age or language, as well as potentially problems with the class of questions based on the question characteristics themselves, such as the length of the question, the response category format, et cetera. And because the interviews are hierarchical in nature, items nested within respondents, we're using a multi-level model to test for these effects. This just shows our sample of the behavior coding data by language and ethnic group. And again, the model here is predicting any respondent problem in answering, and we're going to use a set of predictors at the individual level, including age, ethnic group, language of interview, educational level, and gender, and then also a set of question characteristics, item length based on number of words, the response categories, yes, no versus ordinal response formats, whether it was the first item in a series of questions, and also whether it was the content, the text of the question was customized for the respondent. So some of these questions, for example, would say, were you treated unfairly at work, or how often were you treated unfairly at work because you are African American, versus how often were you treated unfairly at work because of your race? Okay, so the first example, we're customizing the text specifically for that respondent. And then just as kind of a control, we included interviewer performance, which was just a dummy variable for whether or not the item was read correctly. And I'm going to present some of the results of our model here, first on the respondent characteristics, and all of the using Latino as our reference group. All of the ethnic groups were significant. So Chinese, for example, had about 5.5 greater likelihood of having a problem answering the questions relative to Latinos. Koreans and Vietnamese also quite large, although a little less so. The biggest single effect on the individual side was language. So this is English, 0.13. If you flip that around, it's those who did the interview in a language other than English had about 7.5 times greater likelihood of difficulty responding. Age, more problems with older respondents. Gender and education had no predictive power. If we go now to the characteristics of the questions themselves, we also find everything that we put in the model was significant. Yes, no questions perform better than the ordinal questions. This was surprising. When we customized the text to make it easier for the respondent, those generated more problems, so that the generic wording worked better. Longer questions were more problematic. When it was a new item in a series, it was more problematic. And not surprisingly, when the interviewer read the question wrong, we had a much higher rate of respondent difficulty. This just kind of summarizes what I just said, so I'm going to skip these two slides and talk a little bit about looking ahead and how we can use this in the future. So we were a bit surprised at how big the language of interview effects were. We had real questions about the potential of the translations causing a problem. So we went back and NCI, who sponsored quite a bit of this work, sponsored a translation workshop to improve the translations and of the discrimination module in all languages using an approach that tried to decenter the instrument, to produce an instrument that worked well in all of the languages. We also, some of the next steps are to better understand what's going on between language and ethnicity. When, from the 2007 field test that we did, we had no differences by ethnic group. So something seems to be going on with the interaction here between language and ethnicity. And the preliminary problem codes that we used were pretty large categories. We want to do a little more refinement of those to see what we can see if we can tease that out a little better. From a quality control viewpoint, we think that these methods of behavior coding are quite effective, and even though they were developed mainly for monolingual, monocultural surveys, they have important applications in identifying instances where translation difficulties may result in non-comparable survey items across language and culture. And we believe that tools like behavior coding can be a strong, beneficial tool in the development and evaluation of cross-cultural survey instruments, along with other methods as well. This wasn't the only thing we were doing, but this is one of the newer components of trying to assess performance in this new interview module. I want to acknowledge a couple other folks that helped put this together, my colleagues at the UCLA Center for Health Policy Research, some folks at IMS, and Martha Stapleton, Kerry Levin, Jocelyn Newsom, and Joshua Hantma at WestEd. Thank you.